Hello, everyone. This is Dark Journalist. Tonight, I have a special interview for you with mystic Gigi Young. Gigi will go deep on the true and false paths of disclosure of spiritual and psychic truth and tech realities of the UFO file revelations and the powerful and deceptive forces shaping a transhumanist narrative and using the UFO threat for consolidation of power. Please join us now.
Gigi, it's fantastic to have you back with us.
Thank you for having me.
So many things have been going on in our world of looking out into alternative possibilities of the things that we've been studying here over the course of time. You know, you have a very long and deep career of looking at these things on a mystical level. And your own series has approached now how the elites have been taking our own curiosities and kind of weaponizing them against us, including our own curiosities about our own history, about our place in the universe, and about our spiritual systems. I'm blown away by the impact of that Occulted series and also the various things that you're doing with your classes, which we're going to get to as well today. I know you have a new course about guardian angels. This is fascinating to me. What I want to open up with is a series of events that took place where there were these releases of documents from the Trump administration dealing with the UFO file. Now, for a number of years, you and I have talked about the connections of the Trump administration to the UFO issue. And, you know, I've done a lot of things on Trump's uncle and his connection with that network. But Trump himself being the kind of point person for this type of delivery. And then the deliveries come out of these kind of, you know, things we've seen before and sensor videos and, hey, look, here's a gun camera thing of some anonymous blip. Hardly the type of thing that would be game-changing on the UFO side. My question is, Gigi, what's happening in relation to this? Of course, you know, one of the things, one of the after effects of this is the case of all these missing scientists once Trump goes on the record and says, I'm going to put this out. Originally scheduled for July, interestingly enough, but they moved up that timetable. And one of the curious things is that the woman who's been leading the charge on this in Congress, Luna, Anna Paulina Luna, she said once that third tranche of documents and videos came out, well, that's the meat and potatoes right there of everything that I've seen. So all these Congress people saying, oh, I've seen amazing things I can't tell you about. That's the meat and potatoes? What do you think is going on here, and why the lukewarm efforts towards this kind of faux disclosure on the side of the administration and the kind of public response, the very tepid response, which should have been predictable?
If what has been released is the meat and potatoes, then, you know, Luna has insulted every single person that she's been trying to impress and rally. Because what has been released, I could have read on a forum in 1995.
That's true.
Like, you know, the gun cameras, they're sort of like this technological side. And the most important thing about that is the missing scientists. Mm-hmm. That's the weird thing about all of this, is the most important thing is that these scientists have gone missing that worked on these projects that are the cream of the crop, and they are kind of the disclosure. And even McCaslin was sort of tried to get recruited by, you know, some of the weird disclosure people.
Yeah.
So that's the real story. And I think that it's good that it's an undercurrent, because it's almost kind of like humiliating for, I think, this group of, you know, disclosure people that that's actually going on. Right.
Yes.
Because that's the real story. Nobody cares about a gun camera video that nobody can validate, mm-hmm. that we've seen a million different times, could be real, could be not. Nobody cares about that.
Yes.
And they're completely out of touch. And I think the average ufologist has more information and a greater understanding of advanced propulsion and all of this stuff than the people who are apparently champion it. So it's completely upside down what's going on, and it's bizarre to watch. And there's a spiritual side as well, though. And I think that's why this is complicated, is there's so many different things going on under this one moniker of disclosure. So we are getting this technological piece, and then we're getting the threat aspect of that. But then there's also this weird spiritual stuff looming behind it as well, which is that aliens exist, that physical aliens exist on other worlds, that spiritual aliens exist. And there's this conflation of spiritual beings with physical beings, and there's this entire mess of a new created ontology. So everyone is kind of like creating their own cosmology now.
Right.
And so the alien movement is part of that when there is an objective spiritual world and there's an objective structure to the higher planes. You know, if somebody says interdimensional, that's just a spiritual being. That's just scientific language for a spiritual being, which people who have ever studied spirituality or mysticism, they all know what those things are. So there's a bunch of weird stuff going on the spiritual side. Aliens created humanity, as you've talked about. You know, there's renaming, creating a new cosmology, you know, that specifically targets Christianity. Although when you have a materialist cosmology that's based in weird scientific principles, that is an insult to every spiritual system, not just Christianity. That's an
Right.
inversion of every existing spiritual system. So, a lot of
Yes.
really weird stuff going on, from spiritual delusional things that are meant to create a materialist paradigm that we're supposed to enter into that involves transhumanism. But then there's also this very real technological element of human technology that comes from an earlier period of human development, the same era of the great megaliths, the great pyramids. And
Right.
that is being called alien and being said it's from another world. It's ours. And now they're wanting to create a technological revolution or something, and an alien threat and a technological threat. So they're using this on a spiritual level, on a threat level, and on a political level, and all these different ways. It's a control piece. It is kind of like truly the last card control piece, I would say.
Oh, well, that's very interesting, actually, because when you put that many things on the table, when you're dealing with the spiritual background of humanity along with the advanced technology, you're obviously playing for a totally hardcore end game for the whole thing. I do think it's interesting. And if we correlate it with your work over time, of course, you've been warning about these things for a long time, about taking them out of their original context or how they could be used for things. And there's so many cross currents in the type of work that both of us do. It's interesting, of course, that, and I'm so glad to get you on the record about the missing scientists stuff and that whole kind of field of things, because, you know, we've done so many reports on it, and, you know, there's been so many media chains of things that we've done around this. But, you know, I want to point out that, of course, I've come to you with a number of these cases around the missing scientist people and gotten your input in the background on this. So people should know that you've been, you know, really plugged in to this. Since you mentioned McCaslin there, you know, I felt McCaslin was the crux of this case because of his association via these WikiLeaks documents that came out originally in 2016 about how he was being touted by Podesta and DeLonge as the person who was in charge of the redeveloped Roswell material, which is material from a crash in July of 1947. Now we're talking 79 years ago, but they continually worked on this and worked on it. And the dynamic elements that came out of that, we can only imagine, but insiders have hinted at it for years, and some of them at great cost, I would say, that we've had this incredible explosion of technology as a result of some of those discoveries. One of them is this whole aspect of the partner of McCaslin, who also went missing. Of course, she went missing a year ago, and that is Monica Reza. And the patent that she had for this Mondaloy, which in actual fact sizes up very much like the original memory metal that Marcel described, who was the intelligence officer that came across this. entire wreckage from this crash. My question for you is, their close proximity with each other working on this and the disappearance within 6 months of each other, these two high-level people, and the huge impact that the Mondaloy, you know, redeveloped memory metal had, what kind of a shockwave sort of Kerrang in the system is this when those people go missing? And how does that speak to the kind of pablum version of this disclosure that we're getting on top?
Oh my gosh, it's such a big deal. I mean, when you have when you have physical material, it's another level of something. It's one thing to say that you met an alien, okay?
Right.
You were abducted by an alien, right? It's like, okay. But when you actually have physical material that has unusual properties that nobody understands, that is like the smoking gun in a lot of ways for disclosure. It's the materials.
Oh, right.
It's physical. And that's where their kind of power and control is as well. These patents and whatnot. It's very, very concerning. And I feel terrible for their family members, you know, that they're working in these high profile programs. There's three of them that were on the same team and they just go missing and like nobody cares. But we're supposed to care about the hybridization program from Matt Gaetz. Like I'm supposed to care about, you know, that, but there's actual people who are missing and we don't care about that, but we care about some, you know, obscure, I heard from a friend of a friend about a hybridization program or some random video of a balloon floating in the air that's on a gun cam. We're supposed to care about that and put all of our attention on that when there are people that are missing that are American citizens that are basically working at such a high level that it's a security risk. Where is this going? Where is this going? Where are our values? Like it's just... this whole scene of disclosure is so bizarre. And it's, you know, the whole disclosure thing has just revealed that, I think, you know, what are the priorities, you know, so.
Incredible. Yeah, absolutely. And the whole kind of, they even market off the fact that these people are missing.
That's yeah, they weirdest. Don't. It's just not a big deal. And it's like, these people are living. They had all of the secrets. They were involved in the highest programs. Don't we think that it is a security issue that it's, you know, McCaslin was again approached by the Tom DeLonge group? You know, why is this not being, and why is there so much effort from different parties to obscure it as well? So it's not just nobody's talking about it. There's actually different people coming forward trying to obscure it and take over the narrative, you know, and it's so that I think says a lot.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And it's incredible. In the case of Melissa Casillas, who's the one that they discovered. Now they found the body, and here's a trend also, Gigi, where the people disappear, the area gets searched, and then lo and behold, the same area that was searched, suddenly, hey, you know, a hiker finds the body. And there are so many investigatory individuals looking at this and saying, you know, in her case, she's found propped up against a tree.
And nobody saw that? Nobody?
Yeah.
It's not like, yeah, that's...
And the remains are skeletonized after the course of a year. But, you know, how does a skeleton hang out against a tree? Like, you know,
even anybody who hikes or has spent any amount of time in the woods knows that if there's unfortunately a body, that's going to get the carrion and that's going to get the scavengers coming in and pulling it. And, you know, it's very rare that that would happen.
Oh,
in the woods. Right. So
no question about it. And in each of these cases, I just want to say this about the pattern where they leave behind their phones, where they leave behind their smartphones. One of the cases up here of Jason Thomas, the scientist who was discovered in this lake after disappearing, and he was discovered on St. Patrick's Day. He disappeared in December. So here again, we have this kind of like big lag between going missing. And he was a scientist who dealt with an advanced level of biologists, biologics, and he was working for Novartis at the time. It's very interesting that Trump had met with the CEO of Novartis around the time of his disappearance. But he kind of carried on the same pattern. He left the house, left his devices behind. One of the curious things that he did was that he left his smart watch in the mailbox, which I found fascinating as a pattern hint. And then later they found him in the middle of this lake. In the case of Castillo's, she had gone home and said to her daughter, well, I had to come home because I left my security badge here. But in fact, they had said, oh no, she used the security badge to get into the facility. So that wasn't it. And then, you know, the daughter asked her, oh, can you deposit this check for me? She takes the check. I mean, it's very, you know, kind of regular interaction that she's having there. And then boom, out of the blue, she wipes her phones out, leaves them behind, and walks up for 3 miles before disappearing, and her body turns up a year later. She was working at Los Alamos. She was an intermediary on these secret projects. These patterns, Gigi, where the people that are controlling them give them a protocol before their disappearance, how do you see that?
I think that that's what happens when you're in a very high program. I think that there has to be a protocol for you, obviously, if there's an emergency that happens or they need to get a hold of you. It makes perfect sense that there would be one, you know, but I suppose that, you know, it's like the protocol was perhaps that you're not going to play along. That, I mean, right. That's why maybe they use the protocol, is that there's people who aren't, who we think they're not going to perhaps play along. I know people think that these individuals have gone in some program underground or whatever. I think that does happen. I do think that people can disappear from the culture and be used in secret programs, but that's not my personal read on it.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And I think that that's particularly interesting when you consider the network there with McCasland and Reza. And Reza, of course, going on a hike with other people right in the middle of a very public kind of scenario. And she disappears within the person going to the top, looking back at her, and then looking back a minute and a half later, and she's gone. And, you know, they call in the dogs and they lose the scent within a few feet of where her hat falls off. That's it. So a very advanced team grabbing the people for sure. And here we have them turning up dead. You know, and obviously it seems like the circumstances where the bodies are placed are staged. So, you know, they have them, they've disposed of them, and then later they drop them off for discovery, as it were. Not in the case of McCasland, which we still, and there's many that are just missing, period. It's very interesting to me because of the time aspect as well. And you mentioned the tragedy, of course, for the families themselves. And, you know, when I was dealing with different types of media people, they were saying, well, do you ever worry about the families and how they would respond to some of your reports? And my response over and over again is the families that I've encountered around this, for example, Reza's family, is very curious why the FBI has not looked into this case. Oh. They want the truth. They want the investigation. So that's a very interesting technique on the media side, to be like, oh, you know, aren't you just exploiting a tragedy of these people? The New York Times did an entire episode. You know, they did this incredible article about it. And so there's a block there, which is, I think, and let me know what you think in relation to this. There was kind of a brush fire with the organic nature of the missing scientist story. And because of the level of disclosures, like, I don't think that the Trump administration could actually put disclosure out. But with the things that were happening, they decided we have to make some high profile moves to make sure our people don't get under congressional subpoena or whatever. And they grabbed those who they thought were a danger for that. But when you look at this and you see the pushback after the fact, you know, with major publications like The Atlantic saying, like, here's the worst conspiracy theory of all, missing scientists, ha, ha, ha. And like, isn't it insensitive for the families? That's quite a, you know, manipulative approach, shall we say.
Right. And it's like, no, I think it's that either you investigate these very suspicious deaths properly, like a normal government, or what you're going to have happen naturally in the ecosystem is you're going to have journalists that do it for you. That's right. America.
Yeah.
So welcome. I don't know if you knew where it was, but that's absolutely what should happen. If anything were to happen to me, God forbid, or anyone that I love, I would want people to question it because I'd want justice. And we have to remember that these people had secrets. They had national secrets that are important beyond themselves. So in a way, they were living beyond themselves, mm-hmm. in a position somewhat of public service, kind of, in the sense that they're working with the America's secrets.
Right.
Right.
Yes.
So that belongs to everyone. It's not just about McCaslin or these different people. It's about what is just and about what is actually ours and what's been hidden from us for, what is it, like 80 years now?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
That's what it's really about. It's actually beyond any one person, right? And so now that is just more, I think, like mainstream media or propaganda. That's obviously to try to stop people from digging. And when people do that, you have to dig more and you have to dig harder. That's all that means. So it's a tragedy. It's wrong. And it's even weirder now that we're going through all of this disclosure stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's just, it is like the perfect storm that we're supposed to ignore. You right. know, it doesn't make
yeah.
any, it doesn't make any logical sense. So.
And they have, you know, the people like Burchett and Burleson and Luna, who've been waving this flag and saying like, hey, look, Chris Mellon gave me all the disclosure videos. By the way, all the disclosure videos that came out in those three drops were all coordinated by Mellon. And oh. Luna put that on the record just recently in the last 2 days. So he's working with her, controlling that whole thing like he was controlling the whistleblowers. But Gigi, I guess my question for you around this whole area is, why don't those people, you know, put together a congressional hearing on the missing scientists and get the people who are running the UFO threat under oath, you know, take the Lews and the Mellons and those people. So it shows the entire system is inverted about getting to the truth in relation to the Congress. They haven't moved the needle at all.
No, they haven't moved the needle at all. It's all complete self-interest and thinking that they can manipulate the public, manipulate Congress, manipulate this whole issue into something that benefits themselves.
Right.
You know, that's what this just looks like over and over again. And so it would be great to actually, subpoena the right people, actually do something instead of all of this throwing spaghetti at the wall. Yeah.
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 No
it's
question.
A circus. It's a total circus and everyone knows it.
Oh, absolutely. And I think it's interesting because, you know, you did an episode of your Occulted series recently on Peter Thiel and part of his alien god, you know, philosophy and how he was trying to put over this entire meme. It's very interesting to me, too, with the amount of Antichrist work and him working with Christian leaders and, like, you know, developing a think tank when, you know, I don't think there's any Christian bone in Peter Thiel's body at all. I think he's studying the systems. But you pointed this out, and I think that it's those types of people that should be investigated, especially since they've been leaning directly in, as you and I know, to the space that we operate in, which was formerly the independent media and is now sort of a corporate media astroturf version of the same with the PopClick podcasts. And all that. What were you getting across in that episode? And so many people gave me feedback from you doing that. And I've sent it around to a lot of people as well.
Well, I mean, it was actually on your show that I heard about that Peter Thiel had created this focus group.
Yes.
And he was talking about Christianity. Like he wanted to get people together to discuss what Christians thought about, I think it was aliens and like all of the space stuff. And so he has this like focus group, and then he just like gathers up all this information from his think tanks, right? And that to me was just, I mean, I can't think of anything more like antichrist than, you know, trying to absorb everyone's thoughts on Jesus and then try to create an alien narrative or whatever it is around it. So that was very bizarre to me. And then we had these different people who had been associated with Thiel coming forward and saying, you know, we don't know what these aliens are. You know, it's a threat. You know, the alien, and it was just bizarre. Yeah. It was so obvious that there is an operation that's run by Thiel, you know, J.D. Vance, which is sort of like Thiel's guy, comes forward.
And absolutely,
starts,
yeah.
You know, he starts saying, you know, I'm obsessed actually with UFOs. Oh, you are? What's your favorite?
That's interesting.
Yeah, like when did you find that interest? Because I didn't peg you for that. You know,
yeah, exactly.
You know, it's like where, yeah. And then so he comes forward and all these other people start coming forward and saying, you know, well, you know, there's an alien threat and all this kind of stuff comes out. And what I understand on the spiritual side is that the idea that there are physical aliens in our cosmos actually works against any real spiritual system, but specifically against Christianity.
Yes.
So it's almost like the alien cosmology that we see today, a la, you know, someone like a von Daniken or a Sitchin, it's actually taking spiritual truths about the spiritual hierarchies and higher worlds, which has been known for thousands of years, and making this material caricature of it. And connecting it with aliens, but not just aliens technology, because when you hear about the aliens, it quickly turns into, well, the advanced technology that they use, it's merged with their body, or they're going to bring you technology. So it's this hop, skip, and a jump into transhumanism through alienism. Mm. And you have to sort of, you know, I think be ready to hear that, because I know that a lot of people believe that there are many different beings in the physical world, and that's fine. I'm not here to tell you otherwise, but that's not how you would view it in the sense of initiation. And that's not how it would ever be classically viewed. So that idea that there are physical aliens existing on different planets is new. It's completely new to our scientific era. That is not how it would have been taught in any earlier system, East or West. Yes, there are spiritual beings associated with planetary spheres, but they're spiritual beings, and those are different realms. So there's a whole system that is about spiritual initiation, the glorification of your soul. And that has to do with planetary spheres and stars and heaven. And that's very, very real. And we have to learn that and understand that for our age, especially, right? Wasn't important 2000 years ago. It is today. Mm-hmm. But we're entering into that concept from a materialist perspective, and we're projecting spiritual things, and we're conflating the material and the spiritual really, really bad. And that's leading into transhumanism. So there's this cosmology coming in kind of like a juggernaut, that is kind of aliens, transhumanism, and it actually directly goes against not just Christianity, as Thiel would say, or other, any meaningful spiritual system will oppose physical aliens on other worlds. And so that is something that should be said. It's not just Christianity, but Christianity in particular. The difference between, you know, the Western Christian esotericism and the East is that in Western esoteric Christianity, we get the resurrection mysteries, which were not as deeply, they were known to a degree in the East, but they were not as deeply known or explored until our time. And so when you have the idea of physical entities on another planet, that opposes resurrection directly. Because man, the human being, is the total embodiment of the material natural world. And we have to have that as the foundation for the resurrection mysteries. So there's a whole spiritual reality to this that our materialist mind isn't allowing us to grasp, because we keep projecting spiritual beings and conflating them with you know, matter. And there is, I want to just say this too, in regards to this, there is no spiritual being, and I mean none, that we cannot ascertain through the spiritual hierarchies, whether it be elemental or a different kind of angel or a demon. We have the systems, east or west, or even people, you know, making up new names or whatever, but we already have systems to classify any spiritual being. So if someone comes to you and says, we have this being, nobody knows what it is. Yeah, we can figure that out. Mm-hmm. There's this existential fear all the time about like what's out there, whatever. And it's like, well, actually we can tell, because man is embedded in the hierarchies. All of the lower kingdoms are embedded in man in a macrocosm, microcosm setup. So we can know whatever is out there through knowing our inner world, through knowing ourselves. So there's nothing out there that we can't know. And I think this actually scares the Peter Thiels of the world and the technocrats, because they need you to have an existential fear. They need you to have the threat. We don't know what this is. We don't know what that is. We know what that is. There's nothing that could appear. You may need like a good mystic or someone who can see clairvoyantly, mm-hmm. but there's no, we can fit it, it's this existential fear thing that they use, a threat, you know. And even the technology that is advanced propulsion, we had that in the Atlantean epoch. That is just the fact that they think that that's alien is a manipulative tactic as well. So there's a lot of manipulations that benefit these technocrats who want this technology to be alien, and they want a new religion around aliens. And it's a whole piece that we have to wake up to.
Oh, that is fascinating. And it's the mystical aspect that is left out of the equation over and over again. And so the UFO issue crashes and burns continually on the surface, because you don't have the full fact spectrum that you're working with. And that is fascinating, because there's an entire movement of mystery school awareness that kicks in and forms a foundation for, you know, so much of the work that we've done. But those groups like Theosophy, like the public mystery school, Anthroposophy, Gurdjieff work, they are warning about a technological future where freedoms are limited, and where these darker entities like Ahriman take advantage and control humanity through, you know, illusory spheres like the eighth sphere and things of that nature, basically virtual reality realms, right?
Yeah.
It's interesting, though, because they don't say, oh, there's a bad group of aliens out there. They're coming in. Watch out. That's what the future holds.
Yeah.
You know, you hear about Earth changes, you hear about technological challenges, humanity may destroy this or that, the fabric of life. They did it in Atlantis, they rose high with technology, they misused it on a spiritual basis, turned it into materialist domination. You know, so there's that. That's in the Casey work, that's in the Steiner work. They do not say evil aliens are coming for you, baby.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And I think the most fascinating thing is I believe that people have had experiences. I've had experiences that I thought were alien.
Yeah.
You know, I believe the people that say that they have been abducted. I believe that people have seen things in the sky. I believe that people have seen clairvoyantly different kinds of beings. I see them all the time. It's just giving it the right structure and definition so that we can enter into these concepts from a place of initiation, meaning that we should not be speaking about spiritual topics unless initiation is in mind. So we don't go into these examinations of the spiritual world from curiosity or for entertainment. We come in with the knowledge that we are going into this topic from the place of initiation. It has to grow the soul. It has to lead to our immortality, as we would say in esoteric Christianity. So it's how we enter into the topic. There's no invalidation. There's no topic that's too weird. Okay. Even seeing strange looking beings, that's fine. That's okay. It's just going into it with a way that leads to your evolution rather than what you're saying, which is you're going into some eighth sphere, lower astral, hell realm, because you're coming into this topic from a place of materialism or pure curiosity or scientism. And because you're missing the spiritual piece, it's lopsided. It will eventually collapse. It will lead to delusion. It will lead to madness. And it will eventually lead to transhumanism. So there's a way in which we enter into these topics classically that lead to your evolution. And if we enter into it the wrong way, it will lead to transhumanism or just massive. I've seen people dissolve over the years into madness from going too deeply into alien cult stuff.
Oh yeah.
It doesn't turn, it just turns into, even though there are some kernels of truth, there always are, right? Mm-hmm. But the cosmology isn't one for spiritual advancements. It's one of power, control, curiosity, entertainment. That's not how you want to enter into these topics at all. And that's where the danger is, but it takes time for that to set in, right? So.
Oh, absolutely fascinating. Yeah. And people, I always find it's fascinating, people who have encountered aliens, the other, whatever it happens to be. Some of them thrive after the experience. Others go down fast and hard.
Yeah.
Betty and Barney Hill are a classic case. And Betty Hill, you know, thrives from the experience. She thinks that she's met, you know, interstellar astronauts. And she has this incredible ongoing contact relationship with them, like many contactees do. Barney Hill, no. It's too, whatever it was that he encountered affected him too much. He loses his job, can't go to work, and then within a few years dies. So you get this, the same thing with the Pascagoula contactees. I think these are absolutely prime cases of human beings encountering this other thing. Now, there's clearly another thing. So let's get into that here a little bit. So I always use the Gordon Cooper story about, you know, they send him over to Germany in the 50s and he's showing these pilot squadrons how to fly in formation. And he's a master at that. You know, he's a fantastic pilot. And as they're doing it, these groups of UFOs show up and start imitating their motions exactly, except doing them better. And the entire groups are freaked out. And of course, even if you go back into World War II, you have all sorts of transmissions about this type of thing happening where they imitate the activity, almost having fun with it and terrorizing to a degree because, you know, the person, the pilots who is encountering them doesn't know what's going on. And then the things shoot off into the distance in the blink of an eye. So obviously very superior technology. For him, an actual Gemini astronaut, he said, it's very clear to me, you know, these are intelligent beings operating intelligent machines. There's no question. So for him, in dealing with it, he's seen it. And he's, you know, that, in my opinion, you know, we had J.D. Vance or Luna or say, you know, oh, aliens are demons and UFOs are demons and all the rest of it. For a guy like Cooper, he's like, look, I've been flying up here. These things were flying with me. So it's obviously, it's a scientific technological track of somebody operating this type of technology. The idea of projecting a demon onto, you know, somebody flying in formation with you, that's a stretch.
It's incorrect. I mean, at some point it has to be like, can we get people who understand the topic to steward it, please? It's like there are spiritual beings or interdimensional beings that would be classified as demon.
Yes.
Okay, Asura in the East, Asura, that is the Eastern word, one of them for a demon, a hungry ghost in Taoism, a demon in Christianity, a fallen angel. There's so many different words for that. Yeah, they're spiritual beings. We know exactly where they're from in cosmology, which is the underworld, right? We know what's going on there. We understand that. that's a spiritual being that you would call a demon. And there is an association with demonic energy and advanced technology. That's true because of electricity, magnetism, and radiation, and its connection to the underworld. That's another story, but there is, right. There's a connection.
And if a guy like Vance was worried about that, he wouldn't be pushing for AI data centers. Right?
100%. Oh, that is, DJ, that was brilliant. That's true. Like, if you're honestly worried about the demons in the machine, why are you pushing a data center? You're worried about the demons? Well, why aren't they named after those things? So it's confused. And so there are demons, and there is like a, there is a, an association with technology, with demonic entities, because of what we've talked about. And Rudolf Steiner talks about this repeatedly in his work. But when you're getting like a Foo Fighter, you're getting an advanced propulsion craft.
Yeah.
That's not Satan driving that. Okay. Right. That's not, a demon isn't driving the advanced craft. That's a physical being. That's a human being, or it's a type of offshoot of humanity that perhaps regressed from Atlantis or something like that, that kept the technology. So no, there is this, again, this weird conflation between like spiritual beings and technology, which is pure, again, that's just pure transhumanism.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Like the technology does all of the flashing in and out of existence. And this, the technology is the spiritual body. Like, it's just, when you look at what that actually is, the mechanism, it's just glorifying technology, you know? And so, right. but I mean, you're looking at a natural being that is driving this advanced propulsion that has, in my opinion, developed parallel to humanity. And, you know, and even like on a common sense approach, like, why would anybody who has advanced propulsion and these secrets, why would they, the temptation to keep it for yourself and use it to consolidate power into your favor would be so overwhelming, you know? So it's not a demon driving the UFOs. It's a natural being. It's a person, or it's one of these things.
Oh, absolutely. And, I mean, there are people, you know, think about the person who dropped the atomic bomb. Like, you know, that's demonic, right? I mean, yes, you know, so we already know on a human level what can be going on with dropping bombs, and how, you know, that's a demonic activity. So it doesn't take an alien for that, right?
No. And that's the thing. It's almost like culty kind of childlike thinking. It's, you know, so we need to understand that with the UFO file, like, part of it is advanced technology, and that's where you get the missing scientists, right? Part of it is this whole development of technology in black projects that is so advanced now that it's like this group has to figure out a way to bring it forward without revealing that they've basically missing scientists and people, and you know, lied, steal, you know, to get this power. Now they got to find a way, as you were saying in your presentations, to break back in. That's the most reasonable thing. And there's all these fantastical stories to distract from that glaring reality.
Oh, it's very interesting. They're holding that breakaway technology. They develop it, you know, almost a century in the background. And then they're like, we have to reintroduce it to society, but we're so far advanced. How are you going to do it? We need a story to come in to break in.
Because if you found it, exactly. So they need some kind of story that perhaps absolves them from how many other scientists have not survived that we haven't known about. What other kind of?
Absolutely. Yes.
So like X-Protect, right?
Yes.
So we have to place things, we the people, the audience, have to place things properly to get the right effect.
Oh, no question about it. And you brought the key aspect up, which is the suppressed technology exotic technology in the background and its effects and the things that they don't trust the public with, and what they don't trust slipping away their own advantage that they've developed. And why would they, right? Considering the type of people that we're talking about here. What I do want to say is, and I want your input on this, bodies of these aliens that people have seen. So the original story in Roswell, there's a very interesting guy who was a water commissioner, but known for just great honesty, and is not a big star of the Roswell story, but he saw the crashed craft and bodies outside of it. At the same time, an archaeological group was doing, you know, looking for different Indian Native American motifs. They walk right into him observing this, and they're there doing this for about 20 minutes before the military comes in, and then it's the biggest gaggle of all time. But this Barney Barnett said something very, very interesting, in my opinion. He said that the craft was open, you know, so it was like cut, and in looking in, it looked just like, you know, you would think this classic spacecraft type thing. But he said that the bodies were lying out there and they were dead, but one of them was still alive. And he described them there. They are the classic gray. They were about 4.5 feet tall, large head, big eyes, and all the rest of it. And so then we have the account of Marcel and the wreckage and the memory metal aspect. And I go back to this case because I think it's some of the best outside the box aspects come out in this classic case, and how it was kind of, it was beat to death from a certain angle over and over again in the public eye, Roswell this and Roswell that. But if you go in and find these fine details, one of them is that Marcel at the end of his life showed what he thought were the actual inscriptions, which look a little bit different than what people refer to as the hieroglyphs that he picked up on these beams. And I'm going to show that on the screen here for everyone to look at. This was actually suppressed for a long, long time. Nobody ever got to see it until recently. And it came about as the result of a college student who interviewed Marcel before the end of his life. And he decided, she asked him, and he decided to actually make the drawing. And, you know, so I'll place this out there. But that drawing, very interestingly enough, shows these different figures that he saw on the beams, and he signed these. And then, Gigi, it says purplish pink hue. This aspect and the bodies aspect, the things that we're looking at, we're encountering another culture for sure. what are the types of impressions you get from that culture in that craft?
I think the hieroglyphs are fascinating. But I think that if we were to look at it from the perspective of that is a techno-spiritual thing, meaning that those symbols are meant to evoke a spiritual entity, a spiritual force that's connecting the person and the spiritual world and the craft.
Oh, right.
So it's merging all of these things together in one. It's a sigil. It is a spiritual language that I feel is merging the person, the people in one with the craft, with spiritual entities as well, through a kind of techno spirituality. Now, what's fascinating about that is that's actually how we operated in the Atlantean period. So humanity in the Atlantean era, which the flood happened about, I think it was 11,000 years ago or so. Mm-hmm. So in the Atlantean era, humanity was a little bit different in that we used to project our consciousness into a crystal. And we used to kind of project our consciousness outward into things, into what we would call today a kind of technology. Right. And it would sort of create this conglomerate of spiritual forces coming through the crystal with humanity. And it was a different way of living in which we all functioned in like kind of like a group soul, united with the angels through this sort of technology. And everything was externalized in a very material experience for us. And we actually have to work pretty hard to not have this very externalist, materialist kind of spirituality. a lot of what people, memories and things that people have with aliens and whatever is because in earlier periods like Lemuria and Atlantis, we kind of did walk amongst the angels. We were able to see them. That's where we get the Greek and Roman myths of the different beings from the different planets, like Apollo for the sun and Minerva and all this kind of stuff. These are spiritual angels. And so we did kind of live in this incredible space of projecting ourselves and merging ourselves with what we would call technology today, but it was completely natural. It was a crystal. It was not what we're doing now, but it's the same function. And so I would say that that is an Atlantean offshoot. So I think that there were survivors from Atlantis that went underground. Mm-hmm. And I know that we've talked about this extensively, but there's these different survivors that went underground. And even the Hopi talk about the ant people, you know, the people with the big eyes underground.
Yes.
The moon-eyed people in Appalachia, the moon-eyed people that could only come out at night. So every culture seems to have this weird story of these degenerated looking beings that don't even look human anymore, that come up at night and that steal their babies and steal people, and they bring them back down in this weird cavern system, and like you know, and they're like,
yeah.
And so I think that, I mean, personally, I wouldn't look to the sky for any of that. I would look underground. I think that there's a parallel culture that, you know, as you mentioned before, Mactonis, called crypto terrestrials. Yes.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That have maintained a certain level of Atlantean style technology with the hieroglyphs, with the projecting your consciousness into it and kind of working in this old fashioned way.
And Mac, talk about an early death. You know, he dies shortly after putting the book out, a very young man.
Right. And it's like everybody always wants to attribute it with the sky and with aliens coming from these different planets. But what if the call's coming from the basement? What if coming from within the house?
And yes.
Like, it's up in, we've been looking into the sky and like flashing our flashlights into the sky, like, hello. And it's like, it's actually happening under, you know, it's actually under our feet. That's the perfect way to distract people.
Oh, wow. Yes.
Get them looking at, get them doing sky watches. But don't ever get them to investigate these cave systems or whatever the heck they're building underground. Lord knows they're always tunneling and doing this stuff. So I think we're looking at a parallel civilization, like Mactoni said. I think it makes the most sense. And I think the technology is Atlantean. And I don't believe for one second when people come forward and they're like, this is an alien from X42 or whatever it is. I think that's Atlantean. Let's start there. We can get into whatever, wherever people want to go, but I wouldn't start there. I would start with Atlantis when we know we have the technology. We, you know, I would start with what we have rather than going out into these crazy 42 different civilizations of aliens and they're coming, you know, I wouldn't start there. If it leads there, fine. But like, I wouldn't start it there. Yeah.
Oh, it's very interesting, actually, when you think about it this way, because there have been problems. There are problems with the cases themselves. The people that they sent out as skeptics, there were always problems with them because they were liars, basically. And they were just trying to knock down the cases. And it's very interesting. You know, they came up with this Avi Loeb committee recently, and he's the one. He's like, oh, in coordination with the White House, we're going to be studying it. And it's like a new Project Blue Book. And he put, you know, all these people on the staff. I won't even get into the staff on this, but one of the things that's interesting is one of the people selected was Michael Shermer.
Oh.
And Shermer's like this burnt out skeptic from the 1990s who was on all those TV programs trying to downplay everything. And he was also part of PsyCop. And PsyCop was this whole group that went around after people like Grant Hancock and others and were like, it's pseudoscience, and would get them banned from universities and, you know, do all these really kind of miserable things. And the Amazing Randi was part of that too. They're also the group that eventually hired all these interns to go into Wikipedia and say, this is pseudoscience, this is pseudoscience, and create Wikipedia as like a false information bank. So it's interesting, the backgrounds on this, but they pulled this figure, this, you know, kind of defanged figure from the past and rolled him out as part of this UFO committee. Absolutely absurd. So the skeptics were all, you know, government skeptics keeping people away from this. Well, now let's go into the other piece of this, because when you take a case like Betty and Barney Hill, she interacts with the leader, you know, Junior, quite a bit. And he says things like, you know, oh, what kind of food do you like? And when you flash forward to other cases like, you know, the Allagash case, I talked to Charlie Fultz, and he described to me, he was like, basically this thing, when it grabbed us, it didn't communicate at all. And it, you know, when I looked at it, it looked like a bug, an insect in spandex, right?
Oh, no.
And it was doing tests. And he was like, you know, the two guys I was with, who were these twin mass art teachers, very interesting guys, who had interesting experiences after the fact. But one of them thought it was a very, you know, angelic type of experience. The other one thought it was very demonic. And Fultz said, you know, for me, it was neither one. This was a scientific guy doing a scientific job, this being. And the only thing he was concerned with is that I didn't give him any trouble, you know. So he was like the lab rat in the middle of all that. What he did say to me, though, which was interesting, and he got chills when he said it, was that when he was lying on the table and he looked up into the being's eyes, he floated into the eyes. His consciousness floated into the eyes. Gigi, those types of things, those are very different experiences. The guys at Pascagoula basically get dragged on board by monsters, right? But the same type of tests over and over again. There's the thread. The thread is the tests.
Yeah. It's like every single abduction story or a large percentage of them are basically in a laboratory.
Yes.
And they're, like the vast majority of them. And they're getting genetic information. They're, you know, creating babies.
Yes.
With, you know, this one woman, you know, poor woman, there's so many different stories like this where she's like looking around and there's like weird containers full of babies that they've, you know, created. It's clearly like an obsession with human experimentation with an augmented focus on genetics and reproduction. And I just find it so weird that now suddenly we're dealing with this. And yes, there's all this stuff going on where now we're having to turn into the Gattaca society. And it's
right.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, it's sort of like, what's going on with that though? So yeah, it's all a big experiment and they're doing scientific work. I mean, to me, going back to the Atlantis thing through the lens of Edgar Cayce, as you've covered on your show many different times, you know, Cayce talked about the fact that they were creating chimeras.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. They were creating hybrids between human beings and animals and this and that, and they were creating cyborgs, and part of the fall of Atlantis is kind of what we're grappling with right now. We're just in a recapitulation of it, which is
the automatons.
The automatons, exactly. And so are those just automatons? Are those chimeras? Because that goes exactly along with what happened in Atlantis. And if you have a breakaway society that somehow perhaps entered into transhumanism in the Atlantean period, perhaps genetically manipulated themselves to the point where they are infertile, they've destroyed their body through transhumanism and genetic manipulation, that now they need to take the people on the surface's genetics, right, to try to get themselves back into the life wave, to get themselves back in, because they've degenerated themselves so horribly, which is why they look like a degenerated human. I mean, you know.
Oh, interesting.
That is where
they've cloned themselves out.
Exactly. Yeah, they've cloned themselves out. They've damaged themselves. And instead of just, you know, giving themselves to God and maybe going the natural way, they're like, no, we're going to force our way back into genetics. And that's why it's so concerning when you have someone like a Matt Gaetz coming out and talking about hybridization. because that's exactly, like, you know, we're talking about advanced technology and the UFO file and all that, but then they're like talking about how people are created by aliens and hybridization, and it's just like, well, it's a weird angle. It's a weird angle when you think about it.
Oh, it's no question. Absolutely. They will wildly swing. Of course, they had this incredible thing that they were trying to push about, oh, David Grush is going to go on the Capitol steps and kick off disclosure. And, you know, he went there. John Warner actually was there, and he told me about how boring it was to be there. And that nobody showed up. You know, there was nobody there. We have the video of it. And he was stumbling into this thing. I've always thought that they, you know, they have almost Grush as kind of a patsy for all this. And I felt I felt bad for him when I talked to him, because I knew his strings were being pulled by Mellon and Lou. Yeah. And, you know, I don't see any changes there. And I see a lot of these guys going to Hollywood, Gigi. They, you know, the Spielberg train was good. And now the next one is the Top Gun Maverick guys are doing an alien movie, and they hire Grush as a producer. You know, I mean... These are not.
Yeah, the Bruckheimer. Yeah, that always kind of seemed weird to me, because I went through this period where I would have these weird visions of like Tom Cruise in a moon movie, or Tom Cruise in like kind of a space movie, that he was supposed to do the first movie on the moon, or this was like years ago that he was kind of involved in bringing forward this disclosure thing. Of course, Tom Cruise weirdly shows up at the Stevens, not weirdly, but he shows up at the Spielberg event. And yes. Tom Cruise is like the quintessential Scientologist.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no question.
He's
at the top of their pyramid. Yeah.
He's at the top of the Scientology pyramid. So it's just like, okay, well, the Maverick crew, Tom Cruise Maverick crew, is now doing one. And it just is like, it's like 1 degree away from Scientology, you know?
Yes. So yeah. I remember when I spoke to Grush, you know, I said, well, they did actually clear you to release the things about your claims through the military. Cause you know, there's a DOPSER process and all these different things. And I said, you know, your complaint and things like that, you can put it out there and, you know, listing all the things that you did. And he said, well, why should I give my IP away? That's my IP. I'll be able to do like books and movies with that later. I mean, what is it? How can you think of yourself as someone who's going to set humanity free with all this and be like, I'm holding my IP for a movie, you know?
But is it really IP?
Right.
Even like if it's the secrets of the government, or of, in a lot of ways, these something that belongs to everyone, mm-hmm. in a way, like if it's that deep of an issue, is it really IP? Is it really intellectual property? I think just a mind that would think that way is unfortunately a mind that is not qualified to talk on the topic, because the issue is a spiritual issue. There's huge spiritual undertones to this. The technology piece is the most advanced topic possible.
Yes.
This is the most difficult topic to steward, I can imagine, because you've got this crazy advanced physics and technological component of it, but then you've got very advanced occultism, very advanced techno-occultism and spirituality. And so if someone's walking around saying, this is my IP, it's like, you don't understand the topic at all if you're saying that. Because the topic is so much bigger than you and your intellectual property, or it's bigger than you. And if you're going to steward something, steward it properly and actually be a steward of it, instead of trying to think about how can I become famous in my life?
Yes.
What? Like, this is the problem with the topic. It's just... it's so propagandized.
Wow. Absolutely incredible. Gigi, absolutely amazing. Before we go, tell me about your new course. Tell me about Guardian Angels. How do people join it? You get 6 weeks of classes. I know that much. And the material on it sounds absolutely fascinating.
Yeah. So I am right in the middle of teaching a 6-week course right now. I'm just doing it live. And it's all about your guardian angel. And we even get into the idea of spiritual beings, spiritual guides, the spiritual world. We compare and contrast what an angelic being is, what a demonic being is, where the spiritual world is, what that's like, your connection with your guardian angel, which is actually interlaced with you, actually embedded within you. We get into that connection, spiritual development, a little bit into mediumship 101, the energy body. It's really like a great all-around class for understanding spiritual beings, understanding spiritual capacity. And I'm doing week 4. And then I have 2 more weeks to go if you want to do it with me live. The final week is a Q&A session. If you want to join now, you've got all of the lectures are recorded. And you can join anytime if you're watching this months after this is recorded. That class will be there for you at any time. It'll be there as a recorded version. So you can take it anytime, or you can hop on now and we can hang out every Sunday for the next couple Saturdays and do it together. So.
Oh, it's very, very exciting. 6 sessions plus the Q&A. It's something like,
It's huge. It's huge. I mean, one topic, I think it was the angel demon topic, I think took 4 hours.
Incredible.
And then usually they're 3. So it's a lot. It's a lot, but I timestamp it all and everything. So you can take it at your own pace.
Oh, it's fantastic. This is the way to do it. And it's going to be there as a completed course. But now is a great time to get in there because you'll still be able to piggyback in on time to catch the actual live versions of it, which is always, you know, so many wild things happen and you get to be part of the Q&A as well. People can join that going to ggyoung.com. And of course, that's where the course information is. And what would they do when they get there? They'd click on courses?
On courses, ggyoung.com, courses, and then your guardian angel and spirit guides. And that's where you find it. And then there should be a tab there to purchase.
Fantastic. And you have a membership on the site. You know, so if somebody opts in for the guardian angel thing, that's one way they can do it. Or if somebody just wants access to all your private weekly videos that you do, it's almost weekly. It's on a regular basis.
Yeah.
Those are very interesting too. And they can join on the site and become just a regular kind of monthly member of the site as well at ggyoung.com.
Yeah. So we have a membership site where there's forums. You can talk to people that are like-minded. They're so much fun. And then there's also, I have an archive of like 500 hours of live Q&As that you can watch. And then I do a live Q&A monthly now. So you also get to submit a question. So you get a live Q&A with the membership, you get the forums, and then you get the archive of all. And there's actually a free course there about the 4 bodies as well.
Oh, wow.
There's free course you get with it. And then you also get a discount on the angel course. So if you do sign up to be a member, you get like a pretty good discount on the course.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's the way to do it. Yeah. Give them incentive too. I've had people rave to me about your courses over the years, a life-changing experience that it is. Your work is available, of course, at ggyoung.com. You have YouTube is a huge presence for you with your series Occulted and the other things, the incredible outreach of the things you do, the innovation and the potent information going deep in genuine psychic experience, genuine UFO research, genuine esoterica, and the whole history around the eighth sphere and all of these things right there in your video series. So I highly, highly recommend that. As I say very often, Gigi, there's no better friend or ally to the Dark Journalist X series than you. So thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Amazing information, Gigi. Stay right there and we'll record another episode going deep on the mystery school teachings on the planets and moon beings and the dangers of the eighth sphere. Now, Dark Journalist members will get that episode in their inbox shortly. To become a member, go to darkjournalist.com or use the link in the description of this video. Join us on every Friday night at 8 p.m. right here for the Dark Journalist X series. See you soon.